So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 1, The Advent of Lord Krishna, Introduction. And it looks like we're up to text number, what, 22 is on the board there? 23. That's right, 23. Vasudeva Grihe Saksha. Bhagavan Purusha Para. Janishite tat priyartam sambhavantu surastriyaha. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who has full potency, will personally appear as the son of Vasudeva. Therefore, all the wives of the demigods should also appear in order to satisfy him. Purport. In the Bhagavad Gita 4.9, the Lord says, Tyaktva deham punarjanma naitimam eti. After giving up the material body, the devotee of the Lord returns home back to Godhead. This means that the devotee is first transferred to the particular universe where the Lord is at that time staying to exhibit his pastimes. There are innumerable universes, and the Lord is appearing in one of these universes at every moment. Therefore, his pastimes are called Nitya Lila, eternal pastimes. The Lord's appearance as a child in the house of Devaki takes place continuously in one universe after another. Therefore, the devotee is first transferred to that particular universe where the pastimes of the Lord are current. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, even if a devotee does not complete the course of devotional service, he enjoys the happiness of the heavenly planets, where most pious people dwell, and then takes birth in the house of a Suchi or Shriman, a pious Brahmana or a wealthy Vaishya. Suchinam Shrimatam Gehe, Yoga Brashto Bijayate. Thus, the pure devotee, even if unable to execute devotional service completely, is transferred to the upper planetary system where pious people reside. From there, if his devotional service is complete, such a devotee is transferred to a place where the Lord's pastimes are going on. Herein it is said, Sambhavantu Surastriyaha. Surastri, the women of the heavenly planets, were thus ordered to appear in the Yadu dynasty in Vrindavan to enrich the pastimes of Lord Krishna. These Surastri, when further trained to live with Krishna, would be transferred to the original Goloka Vrindavan. During Lord Krishna's pastimes within this world, the Surastri were to appear in different ways in different families to give pleasure to the Lord, just so that they would be fully trained before going to the eternal Goloka Vrindavan. For the associates of Lord Krishna, either in Dwarka Puri, Mathura Puri, or Vrindavan, they would certainly return home back to Godhead. Among the Surastri, the women of the heavenly planets, there are many devotees, such as the mother of the Upendra incarnation of Krishna, with such devoted women were called for in this connection. Vasudeva Grihe Sakshad Bhagavan Purusha Para Janishite Tat Priyartam Sambhavantu Surastriyaha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who has full potency, will personally appear as the son of Vasudeva. Therefore, all the wives of the demigods should also appear in order to satisfy him. Vam Vishnu Vraya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatunde Ve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paskatyade Sitarane. Here are the wives of the demigods who are asked to appear to help Krishna's pastimes. And as it explains in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are different persons who are eligible to become or to participate in Krishna's pastimes. And of those, what's most significantly pointed out here is that Krishna's pastimes are compared to the sun, which comes up in the morning and goes down in the evening. Although to our vision, the sun appears to disappear, but actually the sun is always in some place at every moment. Similarly, Krishna makes his appearance, Janmashtami, then apparently he disappears, but actually his disappearance means that he's always appearing somewhere. And the amazing thing that's described here is that at every moment he's appearing somewhere. You think it would be a little confusing, or how could Krishna, exactly how it works is inconceivable. But in any case, there are so many universes, and it takes Krishna, I guess, one lifetime, or one day of Brahma. So one day of Brahma is Sahasra Yuga Paryantam Ahuryad Brahmano Vidu Yatra Yuga Sahasrantam Teho Yatra Vidojanaha. If you take 1,000 ages together, that equals to one day of Brahma. So 1,000 ages, one age is approximately 4,300,000, and you multiply that by 1,000, so that's 4,300,000,000 years before Krishna returns again to this universe. Now considering if at every moment Krishna is appearing in some universe, just imagine how many universes there must be. Quite a number of universes. But in any case, apparently, he has his appearance, and then he has it in one universe, and his appearance another, 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 and the pastimes are going on continuously in that way for approximately 120, 140 years of our years. And then Krishna disappears from this universe. But he's always, every pastime is being enacted in some universe, but it's not exactly completely mechanical. Because some of the persons who are eligible to appear in these universes are personalities such as ourselves, who have been trained up sufficiently to become qualified to participate in Krishna's pastimes, but are not so qualified to be able to participate in the pastimes in Goloka Vrindavan. Therefore, there's a training period. Sometimes we think if I become self-realized and everything I do will be perfect. No, the soul is very small, and therefore, even when one becomes aware of reality, that doesn't mean that one becomes completely eligible to participate in that reality. You may be in a baseball game watching all the players perform, but that doesn't mean that they're going to put you up either as a pitcher or one of the hitters just because you're in the baseball game. They want the qualified people. Matter of fact, they wouldn't even though you may be participating in the baseball game, but they'll probably put you, you may be just out in the outer field somewhere in the stands. You're there in the game, but they won't even let you on the field, because you're not qualified. One has to be qualified to participate in Krishna's pastimes, because it's not that you go to serve Krishna prasadam and you trip and all the prasadam falls on Srimati Radharani and Krishna. It wouldn't be very... they wouldn't know what to do with you. After so many years in the mature world, and suddenly you get your chance, and that's it. So before they let you in on the first string to actually participate, therefore they have to give you a little training and make sure that you're qualified. So therefore, not only the new devotees who have just become qualified participate in Krishna's pastimes, but Krishna has his Nitya Siddha devotees also, because they're the ones who train the devotees up in devotional service. And also we find that there are many varieties of demigods. For instance, amongst the gopis, there were the Rishi Chari gopis, those who were sages at Dandakaranya forest. And when Lord Ramachandra appeared in that forest, they all became attracted to him and wanted to become his wives, spiritual wives. Because the spiritual soul in its original form has a particular identity. And that identity doesn't rely upon the external covering of the material body that we presently have. So men may have the spiritual identity, their spiritual form may be that of a gopi or a queen in Vrindavan or in Dwarka. Or women may have the form of a cowherd boy in the pastimes of Krishna. It really has nothing to do with our external covering. They became the rishis at Dandakaranya who had the rasa with Krishna as that of gopis in Vrindavan. And therefore, Lord Ramachandra said that in my next appearance, or at least in my appearance as Lord Krishna, you can join me there and participate in those pastimes, which they did when Krishna appeared on this planet. They came here as gopis. Similarly, there are the Vedachari gopis, the gopis of the personified Vedas, there are their Nitya Siddhas. They were the ones coming from other universes to join Krishna in his pastimes to get trained up. And here it says, even if we don't make it that far into a universe where we get eligible to be trained as gopis or cowherd boys or whatever else, still, Krishna says that one who does good, my friend, is never overcome by evil. Or prapya punya kritam lokam ushisva shasviti shlamak sutinam shrimatam gehe yoga brashta vijayate. The unsuccessful yogi, he goes to the heavenly planets where he may stay for some time and enjoy heavenly opportunities. But then, after using up his pious activities, he again takes birth in Srimatam or Suchi. Suchi means a Brahmin family in the mode of goodness, or Srimatam, a wealthy mercantile family. So the idea is that if one takes birth in such families, one doesn't have to work so hard, so that one has no time for performing sadhana or for self-realization. It's considered an opportunity, we could say, a great advantage if one doesn't have to work so hard that one cannot participate in one's sadhana. People are very proud in this age of working very, very hard and amassing different types of material assets. But they're very unfortunate because they have no opportunity to find out what the real asset of life is, namely to discover their eternal benefit, to collect assets in this material world. Or as Jesus Christ said, what gaineth a man if he gains the whole world but suffers the loss of his eternal soul? What profiteth a man if he gaineth the whole world, it suffers the loss of his eternal soul? So if we gain the whole world, even many universes, whatever, but we don't get free from the cycle of birth and death, then our life is considered to be a failure. On the other hand, if we have nothing at all at the end of life, except for Krishna consciousness, then our life is considered a great asset. Even to the extent we have the history of Ajamil, who was a dutiful Brahmin in his early boyhood, but due to bad association, he fell down and spent his life in sinful activities. But later on, by some good opportunity, by he chanted the holy name of Narayan and remembered his, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he remembered his previous activities as a beautiful Brahmin boy, and therefore when he chanted the name of Narayan, he remembered the actual Narayan, and because of that, the Vishnu Dutas came and protected him, getting an opportunity to see the Yamadutas and the Vishnu Dutas. He decided he'd rather join the club of the Vishnu Dutas. And therefore, he spent the rest of his life at Bhadraka Ashram trying to make advance in devotional service so that at the end of his lifetime, he could participate in the activities with the Vishnu Dutas rather than revisit his relationship with the Yamadutas. So the point is that somehow or another, by good opportunity, by good association, one should be able to discriminate what is the purpose of life and how to achieve it. And if one is so fortunate, then whatever one's material circumstances will not be so significant as compared to the fact that one is participating in devotional activities. On the other hand, no matter what one's material circumstances may be, if one doesn't participate in devotional activities, then his life is considered to be more or less a waste of time. Shrama evihi keulam. Dharmak swanustitak pumsam vishvak sena katasu yat nodpadayad yatiratim shrama evihi keulam. No matter what our duty is, however glorious or however inglorious it may be, for instance, someone like Valmiki was a murderer and a thief, but somehow or another he got the association of Narada, who asked him to chant Hari Ram, Hari Krishna. But Valmiki refused, saying, I can't chant these names, I'm a killer. So he said, all right, then chant the name of Amara. So if you chant the name of Amara, you'll find out that if you chant it enough times, it turns into Hari Ram. So he kept on chanting the name of Amara, Amara, Ram, Ram, and he wound up chanting Ram. And chanting Ram, he got the opportunity to associate with Ram, remembered his pastimes, and therefore he wrote the Valmiki Ramayana, became a great sage. On the other hand, there are many important people with very dutiful and responsible. There are many famous people who try to conquer the world, but ultimately their actual accomplishment in life is considered very meager. Useless. Because in the course of time, all this is forgotten. Just like if you go down to the sea and you listen to the waves, they make a lot of noise, but actually they have no meaning. Similarly, even William Shakespeare said that the whole world's a stage and everyone has their part. We have different entrances and exits. So the material world is just like a play where everyone has their part, temporary part. We have our entrances. We enter onto the stage and try to feel ourselves important. And then we have our exits. And no one knows where this actor has exited to. What is his next play part? Now he may be the Brahma in a universe, and then his next part may be that of an ant. So as Brahma, he may feel himself important. And as the ant, he'll probably feel himself equally important. But he may not get as many votes as an ant as he will as Brahma. In any case, the same activities go on, whether we're an ant or Brahma. As a matter of fact, the body of an ant may have its advantages over the body of Brahma. Because if one is Brahma, there are so many complaints you have to hear. Even the gopis complain that Brahma is not a very good creator because he created eyelids that keep on blocking our vision of Krishna. Therefore, he is a foolish creator. So even Krishna's devotees sometimes criticize Brahma. On the other hand, if you're an ant, who's going to criticize you? you can spend your whole life intoxicated, and no one will put you on an addiction program. Matter of fact, the lower species of life, no one complains about them. They can sleep as much as they want. They can eat as much as they want. Even you become a pig, you eat as much as you want, no one will ask you to go on a diet. And if you're a bear, you can sleep for 6 months and no one will consider that you're lazy, at least not in your family. Similarly, the other mating defending, if a tiger defends itself and cuts up another animal, no one will consider the tiger, arrest the tiger for cruelty. Thinking, how can this tiger do this? Doesn't have any morals, has no conscience. No, that's the natural method that the tiger does, or the lion, or any other species of life. No one will consider it abnormal, thinking that maybe we should send this tiger to a psychiatrist or a psychologist, put him on some kind of medicine so it calm down a little bit, act a little bit more civilized. Didn't the mother train this tiger? At least if it's going to kill the animal, it should wipe the blood off its mouth before it, you know. No. Everyone will consider that the tiger is acting completely within its natural realm. But human beings, they get criticized, whatever they do. If you're too clean, people will criticize that you're a fanatic. If you're not clean, people will criticize that you're unclean. If you eat too much, they'll criticize. If you eat too little, it's practically impossible not to be harassed by people in the human form of life. But, so therefore, although the same activities go on, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, and in the lower species of life, these things are actually done with greater, there's greater opportunities for them. And in the human form of life, it's rather restricted. Therefore, when human beings try to eat as much as they want, they get into so many problems, physical problems. When they try to sleep as much as they want, they get into so many problems. But the animals have no such problems, generally speaking. Therefore, if one's goal in life is not Krishna conscious, in one sense, it's better to become into the lower species of life, because one gets better opportunity for sense gratification. The human form of life is simply meant for devotional service. Unfortunately, modern society, they've created a society where they made it difficult to do everything. Not only to have sense gratification, but even to perform devotional service, to survive. Is a 24-hour ordeal in the human form of life. And what to speak of having time to performing devotional activities. And of course, people do have time, but they're so bewildered and they're so exhausted by their hard work. What is that? The pavarga. Working hard, foam at the mouth, exhaustion, fearful, and then death. Pa, pa, ba, ba, and ma. So a pavarga, that's the Krishna consciousness movement, is meant to help people come to the platform, a pavarga, where they get liberation from these inconveniences of life and can participate one day fully in Krishna's service in some planet in the spiritual world, get trained up, and then go back to the spiritual world, where one is simply engage in blissful activities. Everything is blissful. The land is blissful, the air is blissful, everyone's blissful. There are no bad things going on there. There are no problems. The water is clean. When you drink it, you become blissful. You don't even need a filter. The weather is perfect all the time. The food is always pure and it's blissful. And you never get fat, no matter how much you eat. You can eat as much prasadam as you want, and it always tastes better at every moment, and you never gain any weight. So that itself is enough to encourage us to go to the spiritual world. So I'll stop there. Any questions? Yes.
Free will and can do whatever they want, but most of the time we see those ants working so hard and they know exactly what they're supposed to be doing in the anthill.
I never said they have free will, but when they get intoxicated, no one's going to complain. They eat sugar and get intoxicated. They don't have free will, but they have less problems than we have. We have free will, but unless we utilize it properly, we're on the same level as an ant is.
It seems like in the animal kingdom, though, every animal knows exactly what he's supposed to do. Guided by the super soul within?
Yeah, sure. Therefore, he has a better time. He has no doubts. We don't have any problems. Most animals don't have a problem with their minds. We've never seen an ant psychologist or an ant psychiatrist. Only amongst the domesticated species of animals, like the dogs, for instance, sometimes they become neurotic if their masters are neurotic. Other than that, the animals are quite stable in their minds. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.